It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
It's episode 68 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast, now at comicbook.com. Thanks so much for listening. This week I've got a great interview with Joe Harris, creator of such wonderful things as Ghost Project, Spontaneous, and an upcoming book called Great Pacific that you're going to want to hear about. In fact, there's a video promoting that book, and I took a little of the music from that to bookend his interview, so be sure to listen to that. We talk about all things comics, including hardcovers, his upcoming projects, and many other good things, so be sure to listen. I think you'll enjoy it. Then I review this week's comics, and Gianluca Glazer is back with me to talk about news and previews, and everything wraps up with a quick review of the recent Baltimore Comic Con. As always, there's a lot to get to, so let's get to it. I want to welcome back to the podcast Joe Harris, acclaimed writer of comics, graphic novels, and even movies. How are you doing today, Joe?
I'm well, Wayne. Thanks for having me back.
Great. It's good to talk with you. As I was telling you before we started to record, I'm expecting to give you a good chunk of change this next couple of months because you've got several great projects coming out that I'm looking forward to getting. So I'm looking forward to that.
That's the nicest thing I've heard today. Thank you.
Well, let's start off by talking about Ghost Project, which I really enjoyed. That's, I think, how I got to know your work through Oni Press. That and Spontaneous. Now, the last time we talked, Sci-Fi was beginning to develop it. Can you give us an update on how that's doing?
There's a pilot script written, and we're waiting to see what Sci-Fi wants to do in terms of shooting the pilot for the series. I don't really have much in the way of new news, unfortunately. I'm looking forward to some myself, but, you know, everybody's optimistic that this is proceeding as it has to, and hopefully we'll have some better news as the rest of the year ticks down.
Mm-hmm. Now, the one thing I've noticed is that I read these great stories by you, but you never follow them up, like Ghost Project and Spontaneous. Those are stories that you do. And do you ever have follow-ups to these kind of stories, or do you tend to, you have that one story and that's pretty much it?
Well, most of these things that I do create, I'd like to think have the potential to be franchises. So, in particular, Ghost Project, there is a second volume that Steve Ralston and I are hoping to do. We're sort of awaiting word again with what might happen with the title on the television front. Oh. And then what Oni Press might want to do, you know, to either follow that up or coincide with it or what. But we have an idea, and if things align both, you know, for mine and Steve's schedule as well as for the publisher's plans, hopefully we can do it because everybody likes what Volume 2 would comprise. I think it's a really cool addition and opening up of the mythology and the idea behind Ghost Project. And I really hope we get to do it. I think it's going to be a great story.
Well, I'd look forward to it. I still have my glow-in-the-dark cover from the hardcover.
They don't fade. I hope they don't give you some illness at some point.
Well, if we do a second one, then we can put them together, and maybe the one was green, maybe this one could be red or something. We can have varying colors. Very fun stuff. But I also enjoyed Spontaneous, too, so if you ever come up with a second thing for that, I would love to be able to read that, too.
Yeah, well, we'll see about that, too.
Okay. And before we get into the comics, the other stuff, I wanted to talk a little bit about a short film that you had put out on FearNet that was made back in 2007, and I got to watch it. It's called Witchwise.
Right.
And I got a kick out of it. It reminded me of my childhood. Do you want to talk a little bit about the basic premise of it?
Sure. Witchwise was a short film that I had made some years ago. I've made a few short films. It's kind of what bridged my comic book career with my Hollywood horror movie writing career, in that I am also a filmmaker. I've been making shorts for a number of years, and Witchwise was one of the latest things that I had done. Basically, it's a cautionary tale about this little boy who suspects that his aunt is a witch. Mm-hmm. And rather than run away because he's afraid or, you know, tell his parents what might be up and what he's concerned about because he suspects this woman of having magic and potentially being up to some nefarious ends, this little boy named Andrew instead plots to steal her power. Mm-hmm. And I think the short's about 10 minutes plus, maybe it's about 11 or 12 minutes tops. And it's really about this little boy alone in this big house that his Aunt Mary owns and which he suspects of harboring the source of her power. And when her back is turned, he goes looking for it. And he finds the source of her power and more, ends up biting off a lot more than he can chew. And he himself commits some horrific deeds, I think, in this movie, and he pays a price for them.
Mm-hmm. Now, the part of the film that always stuck out to me was he's standing at the coffin.
Right.
Again, I don't want to say who, but one of the characters has passed. And as he's standing there, it hearkened me back to my childhood and that scary kind of moment when first time you see a dead body is really shaky thing.
Sure. That's what really inspired the film. As a little kid, I grew up a Roman Catholic. And, you know, the wakes, especially when you on the Italian-American side of my family, can be a little intimidating when you're a kid because it's open casket all the way. And it's, you know, you have an embalmed body of a loved one, a family member, a close family friend laid out. When you're that age, when you're, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old, like the little boy in Witchwise, that can be a really intimidating thing. And when you see what this little kid ends up doing, wise, I think because you can identify with that experience, I think that adds to the shock of what actually happens in this film.
Oh, yeah. I was stunned when I saw it. So I still don't take caskets and all that kind of stuff very well. And it just sort of startled me when I saw what was going on. So it's a really good film. You should go to see it. Now, I do want to mention right off the bat that anybody wants to see some of the stuff we're talking about, you have a website at joeharris.net, which is, a lot of this information is available. And I think anybody wants to find out more can certainly go there. That's how you see about Witchwise. It'll direct you all these different places. So great stuff. Great
and fun. It's currently, like you'd mentioned earlier, it's being hosted at FearNet right now, which is fearnet.com. Obviously, they're an online horror. I think they also have a cable channel in some markets, but if you go to fearnet.com, you can find Witchwise there as well. They have a nice collection of shorts, and they were happy to include Witchwise amongst them.
Very cool, because I've seen FearNet before. I was out in San Diego last year, and they had a big party and things like that that were going on that I was at, and I got to see a lot of the stuff that was involved with it, so it makes perfect sense for this to be on FearNet.
Yeah.
Now, why don't we go ahead and get to the comic books, and then maybe we'll do this in something of a chronologic order, because it'll build to a crescendo when we get down to November 7th. But I've already gotten the Fury of Firestorm number 12, and I did want to say that I enjoyed your run on Fury of Firestorm. I think it was a good run. I liked what you did with the characters. You know, when you do these things and you have characters, you focus in on who they are a lot more than some people do. A lot of people, it's just the cape and it's just the powers, but I always felt I knew these people when you write them. And same thing with Fury of Firestorm. I really thought I know these people real well by the end of reading the book, so I really like that a lot. I care more about what's going to happen to them, and I felt that way about the Fury of Firestorm. I'm sorry you're not going to be doing that much longer.
Well, you know, I miss it as well, and I appreciate your saying that. Finding the core of these characters and trying to write to that is important to me. That's more important to me necessarily than doing some of the things you might expect to find in a comic book first and foremost. I mean, I think about what the characters are going through and how the action might spring out of that, as opposed to having an objective for the plot and then figuring out how to fit the characters into that plot. Sometimes there are challenges when you're working for a major publisher like DC. You have to juggle a lot of considerations and directives. I'm pretty happy with what we were able to do on Firestorm. I always would love to do more, but I have to say, you know, we go out on a good note. Yildir Acinar and I, the artist, issue number 0 will be out at the end of this month, and I think it's the best issue we've done, and I'm very proud to leave on that note.
Cool. I'm looking forward to it. Honestly, I've read some of the 0 issues by now, and I'm enjoying what I'm reading, so I'm really looking forward to yours, too.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, because, well, I think it's a good jumping on point for people. After a year, some of the interest kind of wanes a little bit, and so it's good to reinvigorate the line, I think, and it's great that you're getting to do that, and you're basically setting the stage for Dan Jurgens as he takes over.
Pretty much, yeah. We're clearing the decks a little bit. I mean, if you read Firestorm number 12, you know that we brought a few of these concepts and characters to an unfortunate end.
Yeah.
And, but then we got a great opportunity to sort of straighten things out and do something clean. And from the beginning, because, you know, I came onto this title, what was it, issue 7? So yeah. I kind of inherited a direction and We, you know, tried to go in a number of different ways. The company ended up wanting to do something else. Before that change was made, they really did give Yildiray and I a really nice opportunity to send it off in that direction. And I'm really pleased with how we leave.
I can never remember her name, but the lady with the faceplate, she meets an interesting... I thought the way things wrap up with her, I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, well, I was honestly happy to give the character Firehawk something interesting to do at the end, because Firehawk was a sentimental favorite of all of ours, and to have her go out on a note like that was gratifying.
Great fun, great fun. I hope they collect these into trades. I'd love to have these in a trade. I really would, because they're great fun stories to read.
I have a feeling they are. I don't think it's on the schedule yet, but I suspect that that's happening.
Well, now, and it just makes perfect sense to me, you writing Batman is a good fit, because I'm a big Batman fan and always have been, and they're actually collecting some of your Batman from Batman the Dark Knight into a hardcover volume with David Finch.
Right. Well, those, you know, I pitched in on that. It was amazing to be able to put words over David Finch's artwork. That's a thrill. And then there was another issue that I helped out on that Ed Bennis drew. So, you know, I'm honored to have my name on a hardcover book with Dave Finch and Paul Jenkins. So props to those guys. I'm just happy to be along.
Yeah, well, it's great. Hardcovers to me are a wonderful thing, especially if the story merits it. I love to have them. I always get sort of ridiculed by people who come to my place and pull out what they think is a novel. And when they open it up, it's a comic and a hardcover. They say, I thought this was a book.
No. Well, you know what? We appreciate hardcovers as comic book people, as people who grew up reading this stuff. I mean, you remember they did not used to be so plentiful when we were growing up. They were much more rare. And when something came out, like the first Watchmen collection from Graffiti or something, came out in hardcover. You know, I have a leather-bound copy of The Dark Knight Returns from the '80s. It's very personal and dear to me. So now that I'm finally in a position where some of my books come out in hardcover for the first time, it's such a thrill, especially when we're in the age of digital media, which I don't mean to knock. However you want to consume your media, be they music, movies, comic books, whatever, I have no problem with people doing so on an iPad or another device. But there's something, you know, if you really love it, you'll buy the collected edition in a trade. And if you really, really love it, you'll get the hardcover. And I love that still exists in comics. And that's so easy to pull off these days.
You know, you and I might have the same book. I think I have the same leather-bound book that you're talking about with The Dark Knight by Frank Miller's.
I think it's the complete Frank Miller Batman, you know,
existed
to that time anyway. Yeah,
I think we have that same one because I have that too. I really love that book.
Mm-hmm. It's like it has like silver trim on the page.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. Now, got to ask you, of course, while we're on the subject, are you going to be buying the direct-to-DVD animation of that?
Well, I'm excited to see it. When does it drop?
It drops in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. I haven't put in an order for it, but I'm excited to see it. So I may well, or I may rent it that night if it appears on iTunes or something. But I'm excited to see it. I enjoyed what little I've seen that has leaked out. So I'm, you know, optimistic that I'll walk away very satisfied, because it is the great Batman story, obviously. So.
Well, you're working at making your own Batman story. It's interesting that you mentioned digital, because the next thing that we need to talk about is your adventure into the digital universe in Legends of the Dark Knight.
Yeah, well, I'm very excited about that. I'm doing a three-part story for the aforementioned Legends of the Dark Knight title that's digital first, right? They're 99 cents each from DC, and it's going to be running in October. It's called, what's the final title on it? I think it's called Arkham's Ghost.
Yes.
And it is not, in fact, the ghost of Amadeus Arkham or anything. It's another haunting. It's another sort of ghost, I should say, that's haunting Arkham Asylum and driving the inmates up the wall in different ways than they're usually climbing the walls. And Batman ends up having to deal with a situation that erupts because of this and has to get to the bottom of a little murder mystery to sort of put this ghost to rest. And it's creepy. It's fun. We do some cool stuff with hauntings in places that I haven't seen a good haunting before, like Arkham Asylum, like the Batcave, like the Batmobile itself. And I think it's a lot of fun. It's drawn by a bit of a newcomer named Jason Masters, who's a fantastic, phenomenal artist. He drew one of the Red prequels for Wildstorm a couple of years ago, and he's actually been helping out on a new project that you will hopefully hear about in 2013 that Ethan Van Sciver and I have created for DC Comics.
Oh, cool.
That's about all I can say about it now, but he's a phenomenal talent, and I'm really excited for people to see what he can do.
Very cool. Now, this is a three-parter. Starts on October the 11th, and I have to tell you, I buy these every week. I go out and spend the 99 cents every Thursday because I've really enjoyed them so much. I'm really looking forward to yours as well.
Thank you.
great fun. I'm so looking forward to it. After Wednesday is sort of a letdown for me the rest of the week. I don't get anything new. All my stuff usually comes on Wednesday, and I have to spread it out. But I discovered that Legends of the Dark Knight, of course, being a big Batman fan, I can make that extend into at least Thursday when I download the 99 cents. I'm looking forward to it quite a lot. Is this the only one that you're on schedule to do, or might you have other Legends of the Dark Knights coming?
There may be others in the future, but right now that's the only one on the schedule.
Mm-hmm. Was it different writing for a digital format? Did you do anything differently as opposed to writing a regular comic?
You know what? I've heard some people discuss their considerations. I don't think I did. I mean, I tried to keep this open. I tried to keep this... I'm still learning the nuances of this. So, and I think a lot of us are, and the industry is as well. So I'm curious to see how it will read when it's downloadable through the DC Comics site and Comixology. And as I do this more, I'd like to think that I'll have different considerations. I tried not to have just one thing going on a page, but I tried not to have too much going on a page. So, you know, I'm feeling this out the same as people who are reading for the first time. So as of yet, no, but that may change as I end up doing it more.
Now, of course, this eventually will be out in paper editions. They've announced that the Legends of the Dark Knight will be coming out in paper, just like the Smallville Season 11 is doing, and Batman Beyond Unlimited, all these things, which I think is a very smart move on DC's part, I have to say. You double dip. You get people paying 99 cents a week to get the parts of it, and then you get another bunch of people who will be paying just to get the paper copy.
It's an interesting business model, and I know that a lot of publishers are considering different ways to use digital to sell print later. And do you discount early on the digital? Do you give digital away at a deep discount in hopes that you can then sell collected editions later? It's a pretty fun frontier right now, just in terms of figuring out what to do.
Yeah.
I still don't know what the right answer is, but I'm excited to find out what it is.
I don't think any of us knows what the right answer is at this point. We're all kind of struggling to figure out, are we going digital? What are we going to do? Are we all just going to eventually download our files off of FTP sites and not buy paper copies anymore? I hope not, because like you, I enjoy a paper. Frank Miller, I always use this example. Frank Miller said he was in a drugstore and he saw this metal rack with comics in it, and he picked up a Batman comic and he fell in when he started to read it. And I don't get that experience when I'm looking at a computer screen. And maybe it's just because I'm older and I didn't grow up with computer screens. But I still think that paper is the way to go. And I don't think it'll ever really go away. But we'll probably see more and more digital going forward, at least in my opinion.
I think all of that is likely true. I mean, I could validate what you're saying by telling you that I know that one of the few growth areas of the music business involves vinyl. You know, it's just the truth. I mean, every new album has a limited run on vinyl, and the people who really care buy the really nice package. And for my money, if you're able to sell my work unlimitedly digitally, I think that's wonderful. If people want to consume on my iPad, I love that I could fit an entire library of comics as well as music and books and some movies and such, and I can stream other things, and it's all great. When I really love something, when I want to read those volumes of Why the Last Man or The Walking Dead, I take the hardcover off my shelf. And to me, it all fits that way. And it sounds like to you, it fits that way as well. What generations that grow up experiencing digital first as though that were always the model, how it will grow from there, I don't know. But all this is a positive to me, just getting this content in all these different places. And I'd like to believe that the prestige packaging of collected trades and graphic novels, I think that's going to continue because there's a market for people who really care, for people who like to sit down in front of their record player and listen to that record and hit shuffle play every time their attention span faltered 30 seconds in. And I think that that's where this is going, or that's where we are, rather. And I'm happy that is, in fact, the case.
Well, I agree with you. I think that's a good thing. You know, you mentioned The Walking Dead. Have you ever considered writing a Walking Dead story? That seems like another good fit for you.
I mean, I don't. Walking Dead has a writer, and he's very popular.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure. I'm sure, but every once in a while, like he's got Phil Hester writing Guarding the Globe now. And I just think every once in a while he might need somebody to come in, and when he's busy with his TV show and his comics, you know, Mr. Kirkman might need somebody to come in and write a story every once in a blue moon. And I was just thinking you might be a good fit for that.
Well, that's very flattering to hear. I have a relationship at Image Comics now, which is wonderful. But that's a decision for Mr. Kirkman.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of Image Comics, let's get to what I think is the big crescendo point of the next couple of months. And that's your book called Great Pacific, which is coming out on November 7.
It is.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that project?
Yeah, my new Image Comics series with Argentinian artist Martin Morazzo. We co-created this thing called Great Pacific, which is basically about, it's this hyper-realized version of the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, which is, in real life, this mass of debris that's all been trapped into this soupy mess in the middle of the North Pacific Ocean. It's sort of trapped by three currents that converge, and it's called a gyre. And as a result, all of this plastic that ends up in the water, mostly from the U.S., but also from Asia and from ships at sea, ends up getting trapped in this one area, and no one's really cleaning it up. And scientists estimate that right now, the Great Pacific Garbage Patch is twice the size of Texas.
Yikes.
And when I first learned about this thing, my eyes lit up in terms of what the story potential might be. We've sort of visualized it as we've extrapolated on the idea that and we've built this entire continent of trash and plastic that is so gross, it's fascinatingly beautiful in terms of just the, both the topography and the geography of this place. And what our story is about is this young oil heir. He's about to turn 21, and he's about to vest control of the giant oil company that his grandfather founded and which his family has built into one of the most successful corporations in the history of the world. Mm-hmm. And his father has recently died. And our protagonist is due to vest control, a controlling interest in this company on his 21st birthday. Only he's, you know, our character, his name is Chaz. He makes the board of directors very nervous because he's seen as being unserious. He's a thrill seeker. He ends up in the gossip columns a lot. He's always doing these odd survival things and jumping out of airplanes. And he hunts lions with the Maasai warriors in Kenya. And he crashes cars over in the Monaco Grand Prix. And he's always photographed with starlets on his arm. And you know, no one's really, really good about his taking over the company. But what they don't realize about this guy is that he's not interested in taking over this company. Rather, he sees himself as the heir not only to his family's legacy, but also the heir to America's great industrialist past. He considers himself in the lineage of people like Rockefeller and J.P. Morgan and Andrew Carnegie and Thomas Edison, titans of industry who saw a problem and fixed it. And he sees a big problem in the world right now that no one is fixing. And so he sets out to do something about it. And this character, Chaz, essentially ends up on the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, where he plants a flag and declares it his own sovereign nation. And then it's all about making it work and all of the dangers that he didn't expect to find within this environment and all the ones that come seeking him from outside of it. He's got to deal with the elements. He's got to deal with hostile nearby indigenous peoples to the outlying islands in the South Pacific, or rather in the outer Pacific Ocean. He's got to deal with sea creatures that have been mutated by the pollution that this ecological disaster is spewing into the Pacific. And he's got to deal with the mess he leaves on his way out the door in America when he sort of skips out and heads off to this place. He makes some enemies on his way out, and he's going to have some unfinished business that follows him out there. And it's very much a survival science fiction adventure. It's gorgeously illustrated. I don't know if you see any of the previews.
Oh, I have. It's really lovely. Oh, goodness.
I'm very excited about this book. I don't think it's quite what people might expect. Our protagonist isn't some do-gooder out looking to make everybody recycle. He's a problem solver. He's a businessman. And he wants to solve a problem for both the good of the world as well as his own power and prestige. And it's a character study as much as anything about somebody's quest for power and what happens when you go into something with the best of intentions and bite off a little bit more than you can chew. And I'm so super excited to launch this thing. And we're going to have some stuff to say about it at New York Comic Con next month. And I'll be there with Image and we'll debut a bunch of stuff. And I'm just super excited to get it out there.
Well, it really looks good. And as always, your stories have lots of layers to them. So I'm sure there'll be some things going on. And what'll be happening will also show us a little bit about the characters. And I'm really looking forward to that. This is unusual for other comics. You know, so many comics these days are getting away from superheroes and getting into more heroic and more real people. And that's what I think this book's going to be like. I'm really looking forward to getting to know this character and seeing what this whole situation comes out. Because in this kind of fiction, you can do things you can't do in other places.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really looking forward to seeing what he learns and what we learn as a result of his experience. So it's really looking cool. I really can't wait to see it. Is this a mini series? Is this an ongoing book?
No, it's an ongoing.
Wow.
It's an ongoing, knock on wood, for as long as the market will support it. We have a very big world that we've created, and as I keep considering where to take it, arc after arc, I feel like the sky's the limit. So again, market willing, we'll do this for a long time, Martine and I.
Very cool, because I like what I see of it. There's a video of it on your site.
Yeah, like. They viewed a trailer a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, you can find that on joeharris.net as well. And Comic Book Resources was hosting it for a while. I'm very proud of that as well. Very happy with how that trailer turned out.
Now, what was cool, Diamond named as a gem of the month,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was cool. Now, one thing that's important to point out, too, is that this is the month that you order this book. So this is the time to do it. Even if you've turned in your order form and you want to add to it, go to your store and tell them you want to add this to your list, because I think this looks like a great book. And honestly, Image is having a great year, so I think you're right in with a good bunch of creators. So
I'm honored. I grew up a fan of Image. I was a fan at the beginning when all those guys broke away from Marvel and formed their own company. And I've watched them over the years. And to be able to work with these guys now, when they're at this, the company's very hot right now, and for good reason. They've got creators both big and small, and all the calibers in between putting out phenomenal work, and the line is spectacular, and I'm incredibly honored to get to contribute.
Well, it's interesting because DC did their New 52 and Marvel's doing Marvel now. Mm-hmm. Image basically responded by, I think, upping their ante and by making better books, which I think is really good. There's a lot of interesting things like Manhattan Project and, of course, Mr. Kirkman's, what I call the Kirkman verse, is going on, and there are all kinds of wonderful stuff. So you're part of a really good and growing family, so I think it's really exciting.
N.K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples, sure.
Yeah.
So much wonderful stuff going on over there. I'm flattered just to be included in whatever capacity. When you look at the lineup, the caliber of talent that's publishing creator-owned books now at Image, it's intimidating in a really good way from my point of view, in that I feel energized and I just want to contribute. It's exciting. It's exciting. I've never been more excited to put out anything I've created in film or in comics or any other media. Great Pacific is something that's very dear to me, and I can't wait to get it out.
Well, I'm looking forward to it myself. Well, I always like your writing, so I seek your name out these days. After Ghost Project, I'm a big fan, and I try to follow your stuff because I know I'm going to get a good story with interesting characters, so I like that.
Thank you.
And so, as if that weren't enough, are there other projects you're working on?
Well, you know, you might hear about a new project at New York Comic Con, a new Oni Press project, but I don't want to jump the gun and tell you what it is, so I would just keep my ears peeled. But I've got a few new things that you will definitely be hearing about as 2012 turns to 2013, and we start unveiling some of it at the different conventions in the new year. Some new stuff at Oni Press, as well as some projects at other publishers. Yeah, I mean, I'm busy. I've got a lot going on.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're a busy guy.
I'm looking forward to not being so cryptic.
Well, I hate to tell you, you're probably always going to have to be somewhat cryptic, because you probably always got irons in the fire that you can't always talk about. And that's a good thing, too. As long as you have to be cryptic, I like that, because that means you've got projects you're waiting to bring to us.
Sure.
And I want that. I want you to keep doing those kinds of things. I'll be happy to give you as much money as I can.
Well, thank you, sir.
See that going. So, well, it's good talking with you, Joe, as always. I'm looking forward to these things. When I see you in New York, maybe I'll have to bring a couple of these things and try to get you to autograph them.
Sounds good. Yeah, I'll post the schedule at some point over the next few weeks. And you're going to be in New York? You coming to the New York Comic Con?
I will be there. I was there last year for the first time, so I'll be there again.
All right. It's a really nice show, and I'll probably be between Oni Press and Image Comics and all points in between. So feel free. Come say hi.
Okay, I will definitely do that. And, you know, much success. You're having a great time, and we're having a great time buying your products. So please keep it up.
Thank you, sir. Best of luck to you, Wayne.
And to you, too.
Simon, you might be able to answer this. Who the f*** is Greg Capullo, and where has he been all my life?
God, it's you, the Black Canary, wanted for murdering a man with one punch.
I can only assume that when Quillen March begins a sketch, he draws two huge orbs in the centre of the page and goes from there.
J.T. Krull will apparently be no longer writing Green Arrow.
Yeah!
Yeah! Yeah.
And Superman says the line, teeth. Filthy flying teeth.
Whipping Boys.
Whipping Boys comics and entertainment podcast available from whippingboys.com and iTunes.
Gathered together from the cosmic reaches of the universe, here in this great hall of justice, are the most powerful forces of good ever assembled.
It's Wayne's Comic Review.
Dedicated to truth, justice, and peace for all mankind.
Now let's look at this week's comics. Once again, I really enjoyed DC's new 52-0 issues, but I want to focus on another book, and this one's called The Judas Coin. It's a graphic novel from Walt Simonson. It's described this way. This century-spanning original graphic novel from legendary writer-artist Walt Simonson shows how one of the silver coins Judas Iscariot was paid to betray Jesus has had an impact on the DC universe, with chapters starring the Golden Gladiator, 73 AD, the Viking Prince, 1000 AD, Captain Fear in 1720, and Batlash in 1881. In the centerpiece of the book, Batman faces Two-Face in an epic present-day battle before the story blasts into the future for a final chapter set in the year 2087, starring Manhunter 2070. I really am sorry this book didn't show up in the stores last week, so that Mr. Simonson could have autographed copies while he was at the recent Baltimore Comic Con. This hardcover gives Mr. Simonson his chance to follow one of the coins that Judas received for betraying Jesus through DC's history. I have to wonder if this is where Dan DiDio got his idea for the Phantom Stranger that he recently did. Who knows? We see many historical characters as they interact with the coin. My favorites were, of course, Batman, Batlash, and the Viking Prince. And by the way, please note that this is not called Batman the Judas Coin, even though the Dark Knight is prominent on the cover. You should also check out Mr. Simonson's Frank Miller-esque part, where Two-Face discovers the coin and does something really unique with it. I was surprised. Mr. Simonson does a wonderful job keeping the different parts of the book as brief and as dynamic as possible. His art lends superbly to the different time periods, and he keeps each of the people unique from each other. If you love Simonson's art and his writing, this will be a must-buy for you. If you haven't seen his work before, it's worth the $22.99 just to be exposed to his amazing talent. It's a very good book that will be a great addition to your collection of hardcover graphic novels. Now let's get to the new 52s. Again, it was really tough for me to put these in any kind of order since I like them all, but let's start off with Batman, which was my favorite. Of course, Mr. Snyder and Mr. Capullo deliver a powerful story about Bruce Wayne attempting to infiltrate the Red Hood gang. And the second story in the book focuses on how Batman inspired the future heroes for Gotham City. Meanwhile, Batgirl shows how Barbara donned her very first bat costume. In Batman and Robin, we see Damian in a bat outfit as well. Next, I enjoyed Frankenstein Agent of Shade as the main character takes on his own creator. Demon Knights by Paul Cornell focuses on the origin of the demon, while Green Lantern Corps reveals Guy's first adventures with the Emerald Ring. Legion Lost tells the origin of Timberwolf, while Superboy introduces us to the world the Teen of Steel lived in before meeting the Teen Titans. Deathstroke tells a soldier story, and Resurrection Man explores what happened to the original Mitch Shelley. Suicide Squad shows what caused Amanda Waller to create the team, while Ravagers highlights Terra and Beast Boy. Team 7 Number 0, which is a new book, links in with the Suicide Squad, bringing several important characters in the new 52 together. The final one, Grifter, was pretty good, but it was still the least of the new 52. Other books worth picking up this week included Batman Arkham Unhinged Number 6, Before Watchmen Comedian Number 3, Green Lantern the Animated Series based on that TV show on Cartoon Network Number 6, and Shade Number 12, the end of that miniseries from DC. Stumptown Version 2, Number 1, from Oni Press, Harbinger, Number 4, and Exo Manowar, Number 5, from Valiant. Dark Horse gave us the victories. Chew 28, Hoax Hunters, Number 3, and Manhattan Projects, Number 6, came out from Image. Rocketeer Cargo of Doom, Number 2, came out from IDW. The horror graphic novel came from Xenoscope, and Warlord of Mars came out from Dynamite, issue number 21. And those are the books that came out this week.
It's time for this week's news and previews, and back with me is Gianluca Glazer. How are you doing today, Gianluca?
Hey, I'm doing well, Wayne. Thank you.
Good. Well, what news have you got for us this week?
Well, the preliminary August sales numbers is out, and it's kind of some interesting stuff there. It looks like Marvel and DC are kind of neck and neck in terms of the market share. As far as units go, Marvel is ahead by like a thousandth of a percent, basically. Marvel has 37.18%, while DC has 37.12%.
Wow.
pretty darn close.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to dollars, DC is just slightly ahead, again, less than like a percent. They have 33.32%. while Marvel has 32.42%.
Boy, this is kind of what I would hope would happen, was that Marvel and DC would sort of be neck and neck. I never dreamed that DC would just clobber Marvel every month.
Yeah.
But this is kind of where I'm glad to see now. There was some other stuff, too. That was one interesting thing I noted was that Batman Earth 1 was the number one hardcover for 2 months in a row.
Yeah. Very significant. Yeah. Interesting enough, sales were up from July for both comics and graphic novels quite significantly. What was fascinating to me is that comics and graphic novels were up from a year ago in August. And August 1 year ago was when Justice League was the first new DC 52 book to debut.
Mm-hmm.
That was a six-figure book that was like over 200,000.
Right. I think it was up 17.8%.
Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. I'd be curious to see how it goes next month. I bet next month will be down a little bit.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you're right. That was just an amazing thing. That's just a sign of what the new 52, and I guess Marvel now, will do for the industry.
Mm-hmm. For the top 10 comics, here's the list. Avengers vs. X-Men, both issues 9 and 10, were the number 1 and number 2 spot. Batman number 12 was in third place. Mm. Whereas Rob Liefeld would say, get over yourself.
Yeah.
God, oh, man. Pretentious prick.
Yeah.
Followed by Justice League. Then Amazing Spider-Man issue 692. What was the significance of that issue?
You know, I was trying to remember that. I don't know why that is up so high that month. I don't know. I guess I'll have to go back and look.
Somebody must have died.
Something must have happened, yeah.
Yeah, there must have been a gay wedding or some event, basically. After Amazing Spider-Man was before Watchmen Rorschach number 1. Then you had Avengers vs. X-Men versus number 5. Then before Watchmen Dr. Manhattan number 1. Then finishing off the list was Green Lantern number 12 and Detective Comics number 12.
Okay, I know why that was a big issue. That was the 50th anniversary special for Spider-Man.
Mm, okay, there you go.
Now, see, I'm surprised that the two before Watchmen are up in the top 10. Previously, they've always been in the 11 to 20 range.
Yeah, well, for Rorschach, you had Brian Azzarello, and Dr. Manhattan beats me.
He's probably a popular character, so yeah. That's probably why.
For the graphic novels, you mentioned before, Batman Earth 1 hardcover, second month in a row that it's number 1. Mm-hmm. The Walking Dead number 1 is number 2.
Mm-hmm.
The third season's coming up shortly, so I guess people who haven't read The Walking Dead are checking it out now.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had Swamp Thing Volume 1 from the New 52. That was number 3. Mm-hmm. Get over yourself, Scott Snyder. Superman Action Comics Volume 1. Speaking of, you know, in the top 10 comics, Superman isn't in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just because it's Superman doesn't mean it just sells.
Right.
The Batman Volume 1 for the New 52. Scott Snyder, get over yourself.
Yeah. Now, the interesting thing is that book was printed months ago, and it's still selling really well.
Yes, The Court of Owls.
Yeah.
The Hulk Season 1 premiere. Then you had Scott Pilgrim Volume 1, the color edition from Oni Press.
Mm-hmm.
That popped up there, number 6. Then Dark Horse had Star Wars Clone Wars Sith Hunters.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had Walking Dead Volume 2. For the people who already read Volume 1.
Mm-hmm.
And then Fear Itself.
Yeah, from Marvel.
Yes.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff there.
So what was your overall impression of August?
Obviously, August was really good. I'm kind of wondering how DC was so far ahead, but you got to figure that we haven't gotten the full figures yet. Mm-hmm. These are only the top 10 figures, because Avengers 9 and 10 are number 1, number 2 spot. Sure, they have Batman and Justice League, but then you have the Amazing Spider-Man that was there, Avengers vs. X-Men number 5. So until we get the actual numbers, it's kind of interesting to see how DC was so close to Marvel in this.
Well, the interesting thing, too, in the top 10 is that DC still had 7 of the top 10.
Yes.
I found it interesting.
Maybe it's just an issue of the number of high-selling books as opposed to having the best high-selling book.
Right.
Interesting stuff there. And some more Marvel news. They've teased 3 new upcoming Marvel Now titles.
Mm-hmm.
Dennis Hopeless has a couple of titles. Dennis Hopeless and Kev Walker are tagged to something with Survive. Mm-hmm. They're getting a little more cryptic, the Marvel Now advertisements. So we don't know exactly what Survive is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
The lettering's kind of bloodstained.
Mm-hmm.
Then also Dennis Hopeless and Salvador LaRocca are wanted.
Mm. I agree that they should be paying Mark Waid something for this kind of stuff. Because, you know, Mark Waid is incorruptible and irredeemable and all that good stuff. This is clearly a play on that. I guess he works for them on an occasional basis. They get away with this.
Yes, yeah, he's doing the Daredevil, and he's no longer a DC guy anymore. He's strictly Marvel, independent.
Yeah.
And then the third title that Marvel now teased is Sam Humphries, who's done quite a lot of work for Boom lately.
Mm-hmm.
With Higher Earth and Fanboys vs. Zombies.
Mm-hmm.
And Ron Garvey. And it's tied to something with Killers.
Mm-hmm.
Be interesting to know more about those as the weeks and months ramp up.
Mm-hmm.
This should be good news for you. There's a new Wonder Woman show in development for the CW network.
Mm-hmm.
They tried before, to do a Wonder Woman show recently.
Yeah.
You ever go on YouTube and see the unaired pilot?
I have, and I wasn't terribly impressed. It's David E. Kelly wrote that, and it was okay. It was for NBC, actually Comcast, who had bought NBC, and I have to say it wasn't all that moving to me or all that interesting, so
yeah.
I'm not surprised they turned it down.
You know, she killed, like, this security guy. runs and throws a big pole at him.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, this is going to be a lot different. A lot less violent and angry Wonder Woman. This is going to be more like a show that you love, Smallville.
Mm.
Going to be all origin, all the time version.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not surprised. They've always talked about doing a Dick Grayson version of that and a Batman version of that with Bruce Wayne. So I'm not terribly surprised. They need to get the female characters going, and this may be the way to do it.
Yeah, it's going to have a young, hip cast.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Like all the shows. They try to do that for Reanimator, if you can't believe it.
Brother.
They try to do a Herbert West origin kind of series with a hot young cast and a hot young Herbert West as opposed to Jeffrey Combs.
Yeah, that's the CW, and that's what they do.
That is. And in convention news, Wizard World has added a new show in Portland, Oregon.
Hmm.
So if you're in the Portland, Oregon area, you can check out Wizard World.
Cool.
Or not.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding. They're fun shows.
Yeah.
And in terms of other news, we have Judge Dredd coming out soon in theaters.
Mm-hmm.
Walking Dead Season 3 is coming out soon.
Mm-hmm.
Some interesting stuff. Any news on your end, Wayne?
Yeah, there's a couple of interesting things. Venom, who is now being written by Cullen Bunn instead of Rick Remender, is moving to Philadelphia, interestingly enough.
Oh, that's right.
So I'm kind of fascinated by that. I didn't realize... Well, first off, I'm sorry Rick Remender's leaving the title because I've really enjoyed what he's done with it. But
sure.
I'm not sure that Philly is a city of brotherly love, is a place where Venom ought to be, but we'll find out. In the interview with Cullen Bunn, he says that they're not doing that to get free hoagies, though they'll take them, which I found funny.
Hmm.
Interesting comment. But yeah, that's a big change. I'm not surprised that Marvel characters move out into different cities. Also, this week was the debut of the DC Comics special for Robot Chicken. DC, of course, the history is, and this is a funny thing, that DC wouldn't allow them to use their characters in the original Robot Chicken, so they had to go with Marvel most of the time.
Wow.
So now what's happened is, of course, now that they got Jeff...
It's huge.
Yeah, and not only that, DC's warmed up to the whole notion of getting a whole half an hour of a free advertising for their characters.
Mm-hmm.
So they basically have been working with Geoff Johns, and it aired on Sunday night around midnight, which is when Robot Chicken usually goes. So I'm sure they'll be running it endlessly, so if somebody ever wants to see it. Of course, they make lots of fun of Aquaman, which tells you Geoff Johns' influence.
Yeah.
So kind of interesting things. There's good stuff in it, so if anybody wants to watch that, that was a big deal. And there's also a really interesting little story that fascinated me. A couple of months ago, Christian Bale made a lot of news when he went out to Aurora, Colorado to see some of the folks who survived the shooting out there. And he's done that same kind of thing again. There's a very young boy by the name of Jaden, and I don't want to give out too much information, but he's suffering from terminal leukemia. He's only like 4 or 5 years old. And the word got out, they were trying to do one of these things where they give their most desired wish.
Yeah, Make-A-Wish Foundation type thing.
Yeah, he wanted to meet Christian Bale or Batman.
Yeah.
And, well, Christian Bale got wind of it, and what he did was he flew the entire family out to Los Angeles. They spent the whole day together. He took them to Disneyland. He took them to eat. They stayed in this incredible hotel. The only way people know about this is that the family has been putting photos of their expedition out there, and with Christian Bale, they have a great little photo with him, you know, kneeling down next to this Jaden, and of course, Jaden is a typical kid. He's going like, what is going on? And Christian Bale smiling into the camera because he knows what he's supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
But if Mr. Bale keeps this up, boy, I'm going to have to do anything that guy's associated with.
Yeah, Most Make-A-Wish foundations, the celebrity or whoever it is, that athlete that the kid wants to see, they just go to the hospital.
Yeah.
Go to the hospital, they visit the kid, they say hi, they take some pictures, you know, and spend a little time with the kid. But they don't fly the whole family out to wherever the person lives and takes them out to, like, a theme parks of that nature.
Yeah, I have to say, Mr. Bale's getting to be one of my real-life heroes.
Yeah, he's really going above and beyond. Being a very nice guy.
Very cool, very cool. I really think that, I think the world of him now these days. I enjoyed his acting. I thought he was a great Batman. Yes. So anyway, that's the news that I have. How about what comics on the 19th are you looking forward to?
All right. For September 19th, there's going to be Batwoman number 0.
Yay.
Yay. Before Watchmen, Night Owl number 3. Justice League number 0 for DC. And then going over to IDW, we have 30 Days a Night ongoing number 10 from Steve Niles. I believe he's going to be doing a crossover with his other book for Dark Horse in the near future, Criminal Macabre. Be interesting to see what that happens. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles ongoing volume 3 is on sale if you're a big fan of Kevin Eastman's work.
Mm-hmm.
For Image Comics, Elephant Man number 43, Walking Dead number 102.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a Top Cow fan, Artifacts number 21 comes out.
Oh.
So, yeah, definitely check that out.
Mm-hmm.
And then nothing really stands out to me from Marvel.
Okay.
That's just my opinion.
Okay.
And that's it for so far.
Okay, well, let me run down some of the stuff that I'm looking forward to.
Sure.
The aforementioned Marvel and the aforementioned Venom, number 25, is out, which should be good. I always liked that book. Such a great book. Then also, one of my very favorite books that's coming to an end, Avengers Academy, number 37. After this one, there'll only be two more to go. They're putting out the 7th printing of Avengers vs. X-Men, number 1 and number 2, and the 4th printing of Avengers vs. X-Men, number 3. So apparently that's still selling very well. Then we have Daredevil, number 18, and also the Daredevil by Mark Waid. Volume 3 hardcover. Wow. Can't believe we're up to 3 already on that one. John Carter, The Gods of Mars. Don't buy that. Buy the Arvid Nelson version from Dynamite. Vastly better.
Yeah.
Believe me. And then there's Thanos, The Final Threat, number 1 one-shot, which they were talking about not doing because Marvel was being sued by the creator, what's his name? Jim Starlin. And so they must have come to terms because out it comes. So that's a good thing. Let's go in reverse order. From IDW, there is also Doctor Who number 1, which is a renumbering, restarting of that.
Yes.
There is also Jericho season 4 number 2 of 5,
mm-hmm.
which I enjoyed that. I think that's pretty good. Very true.
At the rate it's going, there's going to be more actual comics seasons in Jericho than there were television.
Well, blame CBS for that. That's a long peanut story there. So then also there's Star Trek number 13, the beginning of the second year of that. Brannon Braga's foray into comics, Star Trek The Next Generation Hive number 1 comes out, which will be interesting to see. And the True Blood ongoing number 5 also. All those from IDW. Dynamite has Shadow number 5 with Alex Ross heavily involved, as well as Howie Chaykin. And other ones from DC that you didn't mention was Batman Beyond Unlimited number 8. Also, there's an interesting thing. You mentioned Batwoman number 0, but there's a black and white variant cover coming out from that. I'm going to have to have a look at that. That's kind of interesting. There's also another black and white variant, too. I think from Justice League there's one, too. Gary Frank black and white variant cover, which I find interesting. So that'll be cool. Birds of Prey, Blue Beetle.
Yeah.
There's also from DC, DC Superheroes Batgirl bust, where she's wearing a black outfit, which I like. Now, one other thing I wanted to mention, too, I didn't know this, but Captain Atom number 0 is the final issue, according to what I'm reading.
Oh, wow.
I didn't know that. I haven't seen that announced anywhere, so I'll be curious to see. That's J.T. Krull's been doing it. It's been really interesting, a very different take on superheroes. So.
Right.
And there's a Green Lantern Corps Volume 1 Fearsome hardcover, Green Lantern's New Guardians number 0. Then there is Legion of Superheroes, Nightwing. There's also the Penguin Pain and Prejudice trade paperback by Greg Hurwitz, which I really loved. I can't wait to get that trade. I wish it was hardcover. Then Red Hood and the Outlaws, Supergirl, Sword of Sorcery, which includes Amethyst, is in there. And Wonder Woman and Young Justice number 20, which is all good stuff.
Yes.
So I think that's all that there is this week. Okay, and on that note, we'll call it quits for this week, and we'll look forward to talking to you again next week. Thanks, Gianluca.
All right, thank you, Wayne.
want to introduce a new segment where I talk about recent comic conventions. And the first one that I'm going to talk about here on this podcast is the 2012 Baltimore Comic Con, which ran on September 8 and 9. It was a great con. I attend several of these a year, but I particularly enjoy this one because it's focused on comics uniquely. There are no signs of any TV people or movie people, which I always wonder, if they do that, why don't they call it a media con? But not Baltimore. It's by people who love comics and for people who love comics. And this year it seemed even bigger than ever, with more room in the artist's alley. Wow. It was hard to get around sometimes on Saturday, Sunday not so much, but I got to meet some fellow comic book staffers, Raph Moran and Tony Calandra, each at his own booth in the aforementioned artist's alley. I bought some of their product and I enjoyed them. Really good. I also got to chat with Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo, who I call the real dynamic duo behind the Batman comic. Then I spoke with David Peterson from Mouseguard, who provided the cover illustration for the show program. And Todd DeZago from Perhapenuts, who I interviewed previously on this podcast. I visited booths from and spoke with people from 215 Inc., Avatar, Boom Studios, IDW, and Valiant, among others. I'll be following up with them soon, so if you hear some guests from those companies in the future, that might be what happened. Interestingly enough, there were no DC or Marvel booths, though. I guess all the Marvel folks were standing in that long line for Stan Lee's autograph. I have to say that the costumes get better and better every year. This is one of the contributions that I think San Diego has given to comic conventions. The one that stood out for me was on Sunday, and it was an amazing Beta Ray Bill. Appropriately, Walt Simonson got his picture taken with that character we created. But he couldn't walk more than a couple of steps at a time without people asking him to stop so they could take his picture. There was also a really inventive costume portraying Starro that had several members of the Justice League stuck to him like that famous cover back when he first appeared. Nicely done. I also remember Damona from Disney's Gargoyles, several Jokers based on Heath Ledger's take, and several members of the Batman family, but the majority of my time was spent talking with comics fans about comics, and after all, isn't that what this is all about? The only complaint I had to do with the con's panels. Most of the subjects were not what I would consider to be hot topics or really interesting, and they didn't feature many of the well-known creators of the show. Now, I'm not complaining because Paul Levitz and Dan DiDio represented DC while Mark Waid spoke for Marvel. IDW's panel had a good number of people on it, as well as Valiant. But I would like to have seen some more of the companies get to strut their stuff in front of the big crowd. Biggest draw seemed to be the costume call each day. And while I understand they were great costumes, it's not really a costuming convention. But I guess that's just a minor quibble. It was still a tremendous outing with lots and lots to peruse and buy. I'm not much of an autograph hound, but I did get signatures from Mr. Snyder, Mr. Capullo, Mr. Peterson, all of which I will always treasure. If you want to get to Baltimore Comic Con next year, be sure to go to their website at baltimorecomiccon.com. Shouldn't be too hard to remember. And that's a wrap for this episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Be back next week when I'll have more news, reviews, previews, and interviews. But until then, keep reading your comics.